Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 24th, 2026. We'll start today's reading on the front page with The Bright Side, Boy Ramps Up Charity Work. Big Brothers, Big Sisters link with United Way, builder to help retiree. Destroying an old dilapidated ramp can be entertaining for a 10-year-old boy like Axel. The experience was fun taking the wood apart, he said. It was also a little hard, because some of the boards just wouldn't come out. Axel is a little brother with the Central Illinois Big Brother, Big Sister program. He was recruited by his big brother, Metro Decatur Home Builders Association board member, Jim Hall, to help build a new ramp. And the large color front page photo shows Jason Stewart and little brother Liam built a ramp at the home of Kelly Springman for United Way's Ramp to Freedom program in Decatur on Wednesday. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and the Metro Decatur Home Builders Association teamed up for the construction, and the big brother and the little brother are outside this home. And Liam, I guess, little brother Liam, has work gloves on, and he's got a drill in hand and is drilling a hole in the board for the ramp with the guidance of his big brother, Jason Stewart. And then a smaller photo shows big brother Jason Stewart fist bumps little brother Axel as they build a ramp at the home of Kelly Springman for the United Way's Ramp to Freedom program in Decatur on Wednesday, April 22nd. And there are several people besides Axel standing there. There's a couple of young women, little sisters, I guess, and another looks like a big brother in the background. And they've got the framing, and then the boards are going on top of the framing. And Ramp to Freedom. For more information on the Big Brothers, Big Sisters program, Ramp to Freedom, email shallbbbscil.org. It must be shall. Big Brother, Big Sister, CIL. So shall, BBBSCIL.org. So Bright Side is the Bright Side highlights uplifting moments across our community. Visit our website to read more and share your ideas. The Bright Side, where good news lives. Also on the front page, Illinois. News from Illinois. Lawmakers disclose data center water use. Communities facing complex trade-offs in resource management. This is from Springfield, Capital News, Illinois. Lawmakers emphasize the need for transparency about how much water data centers use to cool their facilities at the final of three data center-focused hearings in the House Executive Committee. Undisclosed water use is one of the most common complaints about data centers, particularly for the large hyperscale facilities that support artificial intelligence that are proliferating across Illinois. We talk a lot about energy, and people express concerns about, are we utilizing energy? Are we going to have enough resources there? We have a plan, said Democratic Representative Ann Williams of Chicago, who chaired the committee on Wednesday. I think that same process needs to happen with water and how much of it already exists versus what we need to put in place with the influx of users, she said. The amount of water a data center uses can vary widely and depends on factors like its size, outside temperatures, and how it cools its servers. But one facility can use as much as a small city in a day. Helena Volzer, Senior Source Water Policy Manager for the Alliance for the Great Lakes, and Andrew Wren, the climate policy director of the Prairie Rivers Network, touted the Power Act, a regulation bill currently under consideration in the General Assembly, as the best mechanism to manage water use by data centers. Volzer said one of the major benefits of the Power, capital letters P-O-W-E-R, Act, is it begins to address what she described as haphazard water management planning in Illinois. There's really not much in the way of water use reporting or evaluating whether or not the watershed can handle a proposed water use before that water use occurs, she said of current state regulations. Climate change, Volzer added, is threatening water sources with hotter, drier summers and more droughts. The connection between groundwater and surface water means that surface water resources can become stressed if groundwater becomes depleted, she said. With simultaneously competing demand for water from agriculture, industry, data centers, and residential use, communities in Illinois are facing complex trade-offs in managing primary water supplies. The Power Act requires data centers to produce plans for water use, scarcity, and sustainability. It also requires data centers to use the most water-efficient cooling method, using closed-loop cooling as a baseline for efficiency, and to report that usage 4 times a year to the Illinois Power Agency and to a publicly accessible website. The Power Act also requires data centers to submit their plans for reviews from the Illinois Water Survey, a non-government group that monitors water supplies across the state. Wren said the frameworks of the Power Act will give residents more clarity on how much water data centers use and assuage fears if that amount is lower than they expected. We're asking for a plan that's just a document that says, here's what we're going to do, he said. I personally think transparency will shed daylight and let folks be more comfortable if the water usage is indeed that low. That seems to be an easy thing to do, he said. Pushback. Brad Teets, a Midwest policy director for the Data Center Coalition, pushed back on the planning requirements, arguing that data center developers already work closely with utilities and municipalities to make plans and ensure the facilities will have the cooling resources they need. The data center industry opposes the Power Act on the grounds that it singles out one industry when there are others that use a lot of water and aren't under the same scrutiny. Compared to agriculture, some manufacturing and golf courses, he said, data centers are much more water efficient. Teets also said data center cooling methods are constantly evolving, and innovations include building near water treatment plants or using cooling methods that involve non-potable water, recycled water, or air. He said that those methods are possible in Illinois, especially given its cooler temperatures, which could allow data centers to use air cooling outside of summer months. He acknowledged that some of those methods require more energy, and the choice depends on the hardware in the facility. Cooling data centers involves inherent trade-offs, Teets said. Air cooling tends toward higher energy use, while liquid and evaporative methods typically require more water. Selecting a cooling technology therefore becomes a matter of balancing energy consumption and water usage, he said. Lawmakers said those developments don't change the need for transparency about how data centers operate in communities. Representative Teresa Ma, Democrat of Chicago, said she didn't understand why the industry objected to making project plans public. I live in a community where there's a data center nearby, and it's been important for my constituents and myself to know what's happening there and to have that transparency, she said. It seems like it just makes sense for everywhere else in the state as well. Williams said managing water needs in Illinois requires information about large water users to be available for everyone, and data centers are a good place to start. I know every data center company is different, but what's the objection to providing that upfront transparency? Williams asked. This is a new large user. I get what you're saying. There are other users out there, certainly, that there have been for some time, but with this influx of new users, it seems like planning would be helpful, she said. Democrats in the Senate have held hearings about statewide groundwater management and are considering how to approach the issue. I also see on this page, this A6, in local and state news, that there was more to the story about the front page story about the United Way ramp building, Big Brothers, Big Sisters. So I'll continue that story. The United Way Decatur in Mid-Illinois contacted the Metro Decatur Home Builders Association for help in building the ramp for a retired teacher in need of a wheelchair accessibility. The Builders Association has a program titled Ramp to Freedom with the Big Brothers, Big Sisters, befitting both organizations. We need more kids interested in the trades, Hall said. And if we get them early, then they'll know about the programs that are available. After the demolition of the old wheelchair ramp, Axel returned to the home with his friend and fellow little brother, 10-year-old Liam. Neither boy had worked with power tools. They asked if we wanted to come help, and we said yes, Liam said. The community service projects add more substance to the program, Hall noted. It's a good fit, he said. As Hall's wife, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, CEO Sarah Amanda Hall, has a connection with the Metro Decatur Home Builders Association. We offered it to the families and the kids, she said, and my husband is really good at talking up all the fun with tools. The demolition especially sounded really fun to them, she said. The Big Brothers, Big Sisters also discussed the importance of giving back to others in need. That resonated with them, Sarah Amanda Hall said. I'm always wanting to find more ways for the kids to be involved in community service. Future Big Brothers, Big Sister projects include river cleanup events and building raised garden beds at nursing facilities. Our program is about being a friend and going out and doing fun activities together, Sarah Amanda Hall said. But we're also trying to encourage more community service so that they not only gain more skills, but they develop an awareness of being part of the community. The kids worked along with professionals building the wheelchair ramp with multiple angles. There's very big limitations on how steep a ramp can be, Jim Hall said. So it has to be at least 16 feet of sloped surface. We have to do it in a U-shape. With the extra help, the project is still expected to take a couple of days. We have a long way to go, Jim Hall said, but the weather is great. And the picture here on page A6 shows little brothers Liam and Axel build a ramp at the home of Kelly Springman for the United Way's Ramp to Freedom program in Decatur on Wednesday, April 22nd. And the boys are in safety glasses. They have work gloves on. There's lumber on the lawn stacked up, and the boys have a board in their hands ready to pass it to the top of the ramp. Back to the front page, public safety. Cops, police shoot man after crossbow aimed at them. Police said officers shot and wounded a suspect who had fled into a building and pointed a crossbow at them during a pursuit Wednesday morning. A news release from Ed Hurst, the acting chief of the Decatur Police Department, said officers were sent to 353 East William Street next to Senator Severin's Decatur Transit Center at 9:22 a.m. after receiving reports of a man with a gun. Multiple officers responded to the scene, at which time they pursued the male suspect into a building in the 400 block of East William Street and located the suspect, who pointed a crossbow at the officers. In response, Decatur police officers then discharged their firearms. The suspect was struck multiple times. Officers secured the suspect,
provided immediate medical aid and summoned EMS resources to the scene. The suspect was transported to a local hospital to be treated for his injuries. The suspect's identity is not being released at this time. Police, in response to a question from the Herald and Review, said they did not have a condition update on the wounded man late Wednesday afternoon. Hearst said following standard protocol, Illinois State Police investigators have been called in to conduct an independent examination of what happened in the city's officers' actions. This process is done to ensure a complete, thorough, and independent review of the facts of the case, Hearst added. Once ISP is finished with its investigation, it will consult with the Macon County State's Attorney for final review. The fleeing man had been watched by many witnesses at the transit center, several of whom mistook the crossbow he was carrying for a firearm. They described watching him force his way inside a building just east of the transit center, which houses the Captain's Place Video gambling parlor and the Decatur City taxi business. And then the police came with all their stuff, their guns pulled, and they kicked open the door and went inside, said Christina Brownlee, 40, who had been among those waiting for a bus. Brownlee said she couldn't hear the gunfire, but other witnesses said they saw the suspect being loaded into an ambulance, which sped away with a police escort. The area around the transit center was shut down behind yellow crime scene tape while police investigators worked the scene. It was later reopened to traffic. Acting Chief Hearst, however, said police are still looking in to learn more about the suspect and his motivations. This is an active investigation, Hearst added. And we ask that anyone who believes they have information relevant to this case, whether they were a witness, have some sort of video, or know the party involved in this incident, and can offer insight into their actions, please contact the Illinois State Police Zone 5 Investigations at 815-844-1500. Again, that's Illinois State Police Zone 5 Investigations, 815-844-1500. And the photos that accompany this show police are seen outside the downtown Decatur building where witnesses said a gunman forced his way inside, followed later by police officers. Sometime later, an ambulance was seen speeding away from the area with a police escort. And all we see is yellow, a Decatur fire rescue vehicle, some across the street, some yellow caution tape, and police officers standing outside the building near a black vehicle. Also, a smaller photo show that police seal off the 300 block of East William Street after arriving in pursuit of a suspect who witnesses said was armed with a gun. The roadblock was removed later Wednesday morning. And we see a 911 police emergency vehicle and another dark police car and other emergency vehicles and yellow caution tape around the street with police standing nearby. In more local news on page A3, History Saved, Events Go On. Oglesby Mansion programs are continuing despite big blaze next door. Weekend activities at Decatur's historic Richard J. Oglesby Mansion and Museum are going ahead as normal in the wake of a devastating fire at a neighboring historic home, which threatened to destroy the mansion before it was saved by firefighters. The Oglesby Mansion and Museum Board are beyond grateful for the concerns of the public and the heroic actions of the Decatur Fire Department, said a news release from Dave Davis, president of the Board of Directors. We will be hosting our events this weekend and next week. Monday's early morning fire destroyed much of the Henry Mueller home, a massive 18-year-old residence that at its closest point came within a few feet of the Oglesby mansion. A team of firefighters fought to contain huge flames and prevented them from spreading. On Saturday, April 25th at 2 p.m., the unscathed mansion is hosting a pop-up history presentation entitled The 1893 World's Fair, excuse me, and the Lynching That Shocked the Globe. The presenter is Devin Hunter, an associate professor and chair of the history department at the University of Illinois at Springfield, and the tickets cost $5 for adults and $2 for children. The mansion will welcome visitors for its regular monthly open house event on Sunday, April 26th from 2 to 4 p.m. And running from April 27th through May 1st, the mansion will host an educational play for fifth grade students called Grant Visits the Oglesbys, commemorating President Ulysses S. Grant's visit with Governor Oglesby in 1880. Grant stayed at the mansion, at the Oglesby Mansion, and spoke to a large crowd from the home's veranda. Students attending the play get a tour of the mansion and a chance to visit with the actors. For more information, call 217-791-0405. Again, that's 217-791-0405. And the photo that accompanies this article, the Governor Richard J. Oglesby Mansion, is pictured in this May 2025 file photo. Just under a year after this photo was taken, the historic house escaped damage as a blaze gutted most of the neighboring Henry Mueller home on Monday, April 20th, 2026. And I'm not sure, I guess we see the Henry Mueller home on the side of the picture, and the Oglesby Mansion stands stately in its light blue, dark blue trim and brick walkway up to the front doors. Also on this page, cops, gunfire hits mourner, man jailed after relative of murder victim was grazed. A 49-year-old Decatur mom and her adult son were on their way to a candlelight vigil and balloon release in memory of a murdered relative when they came under a hail of automatic and semi-automatic weapons fire, police report. The woman is quoted as telling officers, "She hit the gas and sped away in such a panic, she didn't realize a bullet had grazed her leg until they had reached the place of safety. Her 28-year-old son was not hit." A sworn affidavit said at least 37 shots had been fired from two different weapons, and the woman's car was pockmarked with bullet holes. The Decatur Police Department is still seeking one of the two gunmen. It said opened fire, but officers accuse Sharon J. Browning of being the second shooter. The 22-year-old Decatur man was arrested April 15th and is charged with attempted murder in the shooting, which dates to the night of September 2nd in the 1700 block of North Church Street. Browning was arraigned April 16th in Macon County Circuit Court and also faces charges accusing him of the aggravated discharge and aggravated unlawful possession of a gun and of being a felon in possession of a weapon. Detective Lucas Bray, who signed the affidavit, doesn't offer a motive for the shooting, but Browning's criminal record shows he owned a vehicle police had linked to previous gun-related shootings that included a murder and a wounding. Browning had pleaded guilty to the aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon in a plea deal and was sentenced to 24 months of probation in August of 2023. Bray said the defendant and the second gunman had been traced in the wake of the September shooting after detectives accessed information from a license plate reading camera system deployed throughout Decatur. Witness information helped narrow down the suspect search, and more surveillance footage pulled from homes near the crime scene showed the gunmen opening fire and muzzle flashes from their weapons. Officers recovered a total of 24 spent 9mm shell casings and 13 spent 40 caliber shell casings from the scene, Bray added. Browning was denied pretrial release when he appeared in court after Judge Rodney Forbes ruled he posed too great a threat to public safety to be released from jail. He's due back in court for a preliminary hearing April 29th, and when he will enter pleas to the charges against him. Also on this page, Decatur, fire strikes vacant home. An unoccupied Decatur house damaged by fire in February was destroyed by a second blaze early Wednesday. A news release from Decatur Fire Chief Neil Elder said firefighters were called out at 2:20 a.m. to find the house in the 400 block of East Johnson Avenue fully involved in fire. The neighboring house to the east was also suffering some damage because of the heat, Elder said. Fire crews initiated an exterior defensive fire attack using large aerial water streams along with smaller handline water streams. The last fire units left the scene at approximately 5 a.m. No injuries to civilians or firefighters have been reported. Elder noted that the house had suffered significant damage in the February fire, and the cause of the latest blaze was under investigation. And in other state news from Jacksonville, Journal Courier, British Airways flying St. Louis to London. Nonstop flights between St. Louis and London officially began Sunday when a British Airways jet landed at St. Louis Lambert International Airport. The moment the plane pulled into the gate, it marked St. Louis becoming the 27th U.S. destination to join the British Airways network. In a press release from the airline, British Airways said the inaugural flight was given the moniker Gateway to the West and that the entire crew that operated the flight went by the names of Lewis, L-O-U-I-S, Lewis, L-E-W-I-S, or Louise. It's always a proud moment when we see a new route take to the skies. After months of careful planning, British Airways Chief Planning and Strategy Officer Neil Chernoff said in a statement, "These two new destinations offer our customers even more choice and opportunities to explore, whether that's across the Atlantic to America's Midwest or a short hop off the coast to the Channel Islands. There's a breadth of options for travelers looking to get away this summer holiday season. We proudly welcome British Airways to St. Louis Lambert International Airport as our newest airline partner." St. Louis Lambert International Airport CEO and Airport Director Rhonda Hamm Nybrugge, added her with her statement, "With London joining the list of destinations, we celebrate a significant moment in the airport's storied history. Today, London signifies the dawn of a new era for international travels at St. Louis Lambert International Airport. British Airways said the new service comes as Route 66 approaches its 100th anniversary and the U.S. prepares to mark its 250th birthday. The airline also said St. Louis would serve as a destination or stop for travelers headed to World Cup matches in Kansas City, St. Louis. In Kansas City, St. Louis will host group stage and knockout matches during the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics. The route is operated by Boeing 787 fleet, which is currently being fitted with Starlink, the fastest Wi-Fi in the sky. Customers have a choice of three cabins: World Traveler Economy, World Traveler Plus Premium Economy, and Club World Business Class," the airline said. That's all we have time for the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated Friday, April 24th, 2026. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.